welcome to Module 4 in this series of resources about shared management for service providers. In this module, we're focusing on how shared management works in the NDIS. I'm Leighton Jay, and I'm one of your hosts for this module. I'm delighted today to be joined by Susie-Anne Lee as my co-host. Susie-Anne, welcome aboard.
Thanks, Leighton. Hi, everyone.
Can I call you Sue?
Of course, most people do.
As the NDIS rolls out across Australia, people with disability, family members and service providers are all experiencing a great deal of confusion about exactly how it works. This isn't surprising because a scheme this big was always going to be complex to build and would take some time. One of the things we notice is that because the NDIS doesn't have a shared management option for people to choose, many people and providers are unsure if shared management is even a possibility in the NDIS.
Yeah, that's right, Leighton. But our aim in this module is to cut through this confusion and provide greater clarity about how shared management is in fact already working for some people in the NDIS.
Okay, so Sue, what are the consequences for providers if they don't know how shared management works?
Well, firstly, not being clear means you're going to feel confused and uncertain, I guess. That then may rub off on the people you serve in a variety of ways. You may even be unsure about which NDIS management option will be the best fit for shared management. With the prices set by the NDIS price guide, your leaders will understandably be wary of offering services that they aren't certain can be invoiced and paid for. They won't want to lose money or jeopardize your organization's long-term sustainability.
So this sense of uncertainty may mean that provider staff will lack confidence or be uncertain about what they can say to people who share manage their NDIS services and funding?
Yes, and that in turn may mean that some people will miss out on some options and opportunities that could deliver them some really great outcomes.
Okay, now I've observed that lots of people coming into the NDIS feel quite anxious about the experience of joining the scheme. That's people and families, and I suspect that for people who are already share managing, having another factor to feel uncertain about might increase their anxiety.
Yes, I think that's likely to be the case for some people for sure, especially for those who are transitioning or about to transition. Lots of people who've been in the scheme for a while seem to learn from their experience, so aren't generally as anxious once they've been in it for a bit.
Okay. So why should providers want to know how shared management fits in the NDIS?
There's a few reasons. First up, if you're a provider who is or wants to be offering shared management, you'll be able to act with greater clarity and confidence. And since the scheme is here to stay, you might as well get that clarity and confidence as soon as you can. Secondly, that means your organization will more easily be able to make strategic decisions about shared management and where it fits within your long-term plan and services.
Okay, that makes sense.
Thirdly, though, you'll be clearer about what practical steps you need to take to support people and families who want to use shared management in the NDIS. Your guidance and advice will enable them to consider a greater range of options and choose the best approach to managing their NDIS funding for them.
And assuming you do the work of costing all your services properly, you'll be able to quote on the various components of shared management that people might ask you for. So you can be more confident that you're not going to be providing services that people can't afford or can't pay you for.
Yes, and you'll have systems that make it easy for you to invoice for these services and be paid for them in a timely way.
Okay, so that logically leads us to talk about what you can expect to learn from the module. And we've identified four learning outcomes. You can find these in the introduction in your workbook for this module.
Yes, and in brief, the first learning outcome enables you to explain how shared management services and activities promote and support the intentions of the NDIS Act.
And then the other three learning outcomes all enable you to describe how shared management can be implemented under the scheme, under each of the different management options that the NDIS gives participants to choose from.
Which should mean you're well on your way to being able to make shared management work for your organisation under the NDIS.
So in essence, you'll be able to answer three key questions by the time you finish.
Yep. One, how is shared management consistent with the intentions of the NDIS?
Two, which management option or options can be used for shared management?
And three, operationally and practically, how can you make shared management work in the NDIS?
So if we succeed with this, you'll have the answers to these questions by the time you complete the module. And to begin with, let's check what you already know about shared management in the NDIS. When you completed Module 1, there was a short quiz at the end which included the questions in Activity 4.0. So turn to that activity in your workbook now. We want you to either redo the quiz or to find your original answers in your Module 1 workbook and transfer them to here. And if you haven't done Module 1, just take a moment to complete the quiz now.
Pause the recording whilst you do this, and we're hoping it should only take you a minute or two.
And if you're listening to this as a podcast while you're driving or doing something that means you can't do the activities right now, make sure you complete them as soon as you can. Click play when you're ready to continue. We'll come back to the quiz at the end of the module.
Before we explore how shared management fits within the NDIS's management options, it's very important to consider how shared management fits with the NDIS Act. With the scheme still being created, resolving areas of uncertainty by seeing what the Act actually says is an important first step.
Yes, that's right, Sue. So we've designed activity 4.1 to help you address this. Turn to it in your workbook now. And specifically, we're asking, how does shared management promote and support the intentions of the NDIS?
Yeah, at WAIS, we think the short answer is that shared management does this really well, actually. But we don't want you to just take our word for this. We want you to explore it for yourself.
So you'll see that we've listed the 5 shared management principles in the left-hand column of the table, and the other 3 columns have been labelled with sections 3, 4 and 5 of the Act, respectively. These sections are the objects and the general principles in the Act. We've copied these 3 sections into your workbook just below the table. Section 3, the object, spells out the intentions behind the legislation, so it's obviously really important.
And sections 4 and 5 are important because they explicitly outline the general principles guiding actions under the Act. Together, these 3 sections of the Act provide the legal framework for what the NDIS is supposed to achieve for people with disability and how people are supposed to act and behave in the context of the NDIS.
So your task is to read through each of the clauses to identify which of the 5 shared management principles each clause aligns with. And it could be anything from none of the principles to all 5 of them. So pause the recording, follow the instructions in your workbook and complete the activity now. And click play when you're ready to continue. How did you go?
Well, we've done this activity too. And in our assessment, with just a couple of exceptions, we think all of these clauses align with at least one of the shared management principles. For example, at least one shared management principle aligns with objects 1A, C, E, or G. Now, it's possible that you might disagree with some of our assessments, and that's okay. But we also think that there are some clauses where there really isn't any dispute that shared management, done well, demonstrates a very strong commitment to the intentions expressed in those clauses. Object 1E is a good example of this. Shared management absolutely enables people with disability to exercise choice and control in the pursuit of their goals and the planning and delivery of their supports.
Quote, unquote. Yes, it does that very well. What about Section 4, the general principles guiding actions under the Act?
Well, here we think there's a strong argument that all of the first 16 guiding principles align with at least one shared management principle. Guiding principle 5 is likely an exception, and that's because it focuses specifically on early intervention.
And so what about section 5 of the Act? This covers the general principles guiding actions of people who may do acts or things on behalf of others. That's the actual title of that section.
Our analysis of this section leads us to conclude that shared management aligns with clauses A to E here.
And there is only one other clause, isn't there, F, in this section, and that specifically, again, involves situations with children, isn't it?
That's right. And if you want to see how we've analysed this activity, you can check out the supplementary resources for this module. And while it's possible that some people might argue with some of our analysis, we're aware of that, we think the overall conclusion is pretty clear. There's a really compelling argument that shared management is a valuable approach that enables providers to create and deliver the sorts of supports and opportunities intended by the NDIS's creators, as these intentions are also expressed in the NDIS Act.
Thanks for that, Sue. That's really good. So having established that shared management is a good fit with the intentions embedded in the legislation, let's turn our attention to some more practical issues related to how you can provide shared management within the NDIS.
Okay. You probably already know that NDIS participants have three options when it comes to managing their plans and funding.
Yes, you're talking about agency management, plan management, and self-management, right?
Yeah, that's right. And you'll notice that shared management is not one of these options. So we need to figure out how it fits. Where and how can shared management fit within these three management options?
And so just before we answer this, can we very quickly review those three options?
Sure, good idea. Agency management is when the NDIA holds the person's funds and pays invoices on their behalf. Providers deliver services to a person who is using this option, then invoice the NDIA directly afterwards in order to be paid for these services.
And NDIS participants or their nominees can monitor their budget using the participant portal to make sure they don't overspend, correct?
Yes, that's right. And they can use the portal to make sure that providers are only invoicing for services and amounts that they are entitled to. Now, a plan management option, the person or their nominee engages a plan manager to do some things on their behalf. These are typically the tasks required to pay people and organizations who provide NDIS-funded services to the person.
And plan managers have to be registered with the NDIS, don't they? And participants receive a specified amount in their plans to pay for the cost of the plan management services, if I got that correct?
Yeah, that's right, on both counts. And for people who choose a self-management option, the funding pathway is a bit different. The person or the nominee is responsible for managing their funding and organizing their services. In a typical self-management situation, this could include things like employing or contracting their workers, managing timesheets and rosters, paying their workers, and making claims from the NDIS so that the workers are paid from their funding.
Okay, so which of the three options can accommodate a shared management approach?
Well, the short answer is that shared management arrangements can and are actually being established using all three of these options.
Okay, so we're going to explore all of this in some more detail in just a minute. But before we do that, is there anything that people should know that applies across all three options?
Yes, there are three things that apply across all of them that people should note. Firstly, the choice about which management option the person chooses in their NDIS plan is their decision to make.
So the person's decision.
And in our experience, some providers have a preference for one approach over another. So it's really important to remember that this is not your decision, it's the person's decision, like you said, Leighton.
Okay, we're going to touch on this again before we finish the module.
Okay. The second thing to note is that decisions about who is responsible for doing what should be discussed early and recorded in a service agreement. And thirdly, The person doesn't necessarily have to do all the tasks associated with their responsibilities by themselves. Providers or others can support and assist them, especially when the person is building the capacity to do things for themselves.
Okay, well, thanks for that quick overview, Sue. And that brings us to activity 4.2. So turn to that now in your workbook.
So in this activity, we're going to explain how shared management works using the NDIS's agency management option. We want you to be able to describe this to someone else. So with all three of these NDIS management option descriptions, we have enlisted the help of people who have a lot of shared management experience and work for service providers to assist us.
And the first person I visited was Mel Arco at a provider called My Place in Western Australia.
So, Leighton, it might be helpful for people to know that an important part of My Place's overall service philosophy is that they take a whole-of-life perspective with the people they support. They want to ensure that whatever support they provide is moving each person closer to having the life they really want to live. So their shared management works really well within that philosophy.
That's a good point, Sue. Mel has many years of experience in the sector and has been supporting people to use shared management approaches for well over a decade now. Let's check in and see how my visit went. So welcome, Mel. Thanks for sharing your knowledge with us for this bit of the learning journey.
You're welcome, Leighton.
Mel, I'm going to hand over to you now to sketch out for us how shared management works in an agency management way. And I know there's going to be lots of people watching and listening who'll be really interested to hear this.
Okay, when a person
we don't know approaches us about providing services to them, we have an initial chat with them about their plan, and often that's on the phone. If they don't know us, we'll tell them a bit about who we are, what we do, and how we work. If they are interested in our organisation, we then arrange to meet with them face to face. One of our managers will meet with the person and get to know them, who they are, what their context is. At this point, we will also explore whether the person wants to be the employer of their support staff or if they want us to be the employer. If they choose to be the employer, then we will set them up under a shared management. People need to be really clear and comfortable about this role if they choose this. Some people want to think about this first, and we talk about what's involved with being the employer and what support we can provide. If they want our organisation to be the employer, then that's a fully agency managed option and not a shared management arrangement. The coordinator will meet with the person and get to know them some more, their interests and skills, what's important to them, what's important for them, who else is in their life, do they have or want a job, their social networks and things like that. The coordinator will then sit down and work through both the person's and the provider's responsibilities as well as our service agreement. This might be one conversation, but it might be two or three conversations. This is a really important discussion to have. So whatever you do, don't rush it. We use a responsibilities guide document, which includes the service agreement, to guide us through these discussions. Our long history of doing shared management has taught us that there are lots of things that can become issues at a later date. So it's important to open a discussion about these things and set out some clear and agreed expectations right from the start. This usually makes it a whole lot easier to address anything tricky that may arise later. If you don't do this at the start, then those things are more likely to become a problem for you. For example, what I mean are issues such as how services will be monitored, or if there's a quality or safeguarding issue, or a serious incident that we need to know about. The next step is an important one and involves working out a schedule of supports based on the person's NDIS plan and what they hope to achieve. So we will work together to develop a schedule that includes their daily, weekly and annual supports. Alongside that, we will develop a budget that includes all of the person's support costs, wages, superannuation and other on costs, such as training, advertising and so on. It also includes our costs to provide shared management. So we have to be really clear about what those are. Things like the bureau and administration costs, for example. It can include a provision for emergency backup supports over the year, if that is something the person wants. Everything is incorporated within the yearly budget to give a general idea of how it might look. And of course, the budget needs to fit the person's plan and supports. When everyone is happy with it, we all sign off on it. The schedule of support forms part of the service agreement. In the NDIS, this is important because the person needs to instruct us as to what the supports are for so that we can correctly claim for them and then receive the funds from the NDIS to cover their costs. If this isn't clear, then there is a risk that the funds will come from the wrong service area. If funds are not claimed from the correct area, people may use up their budget too quickly on some of their service lines. We help people monitor their budget. We try to support people to be flexible by being responsive to their supports and lifestyle. Sometimes people's lives change and their budget does not meet their support needs. If this happens, we will support them to go back to NDIS to do a change of circumstance and have their plan reviewed if that's the best option and something they want to do. Now, if the person is someone we already support or know, or if the person comes to us well before their NDIS planning meeting, we can do a lot of pre-planning with them. This can include getting really clear about their goals and support needs and going through some of the service agreement elements before they do their plan. In most cases, we can then prepare a draft budget with them, but obviously this can only be finalised once the person has received their approved NDIS plan.
Thanks for that, Mel. You've sketched that out quite well. Now, I know there are providers who want to know what the benefits are of using an agency management option for shared management. Do you want to comment on that at all?
Yes, Layton, please do. Generally, I guess it provides people with peace of mind. They can get on with living their lives knowing that we're taking care of the paperwork and the legal side of things. So I think that's a great benefit to people. And also, I think for people to know they have someone walking alongside them to support them with their arrangements, helping them to navigate the systems and problem solve along the way, I think that's also a great benefit.
Okay, so they're things that we heard from people as well in earlier modules that they actually said for themselves were the benefits, so that's kind of good reassurance. I'm wondering as well from a provider's point of view, I would have thought that one of the benefits providers get is it's another way of helping to make sure that your services are really bespoke, I guess, for people and really tailored around people.
Yes, absolutely. We learn from each other very much, and we're very person-centred. So it's about working and tailoring our arrangements to each person's.
Okay.
But at the same time, there's that two-way learning that we get from each other.
It's really good for the organisation as well. I'm also interested here if providers should be aware of any challenges or limitations of using an agency management approach for shared management. Are they likely to run into any issues using this approach?
Well, we've learnt that our shared management coordinator's role is very important. Each one of our coordinators works with up to 40 people at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
And setting up new arrangements or reviewing an existing one is a really intense time. We really are engaging closely together around these moments. One of the coordinator's key tasks at this point is to ensure the person's supports are meeting their needs, which includes developing a budget with the person so that they have adequate resources to meet their supports. It's really important that we get that right.
Okay, and that's kind of fine-tuning that initial daily and weekly and annual budget you spoke about once they've got their NDIS plan.
Yes, that's correct. It's really important to be in clear agreement about what supports will be used and in what quantities each week or fortnight. That's because we have to be able to match our claims to what's in the person's NDIS plan.
Does that mean that some of the flexibility goes for the person? Like, do they have to have a set number of hours of support, say, every week, and they can't really change that?
No. They have a lot of flexibility around their supports. Their plan usually has a number of hours across the year, so people can use that quite flexibly. But we have to work together on that because you don't want to run out of hours if you use them all.
So you don't want to be a quarter. You don't want the person to be a quarter of the way through the year and have used three quarters of their funds and their plan.
That's correct.
Okay, and so if you can't match things to the claims to what's in the person's plan, then what happens?
Well, we won't be paid. For example, if the person uses their funds for, say, gardening and that's not in their plan, we can't claim it. Or if they pay someone more than what their plan funds allow, then there will be a shortfall that they will probably have to pay. Mm-hmm. So you can see that if people do this, they're going to run into problems with the NDIS. So we need to work together to monitor this fairly closely.
Okay, and I'm kind of guessing that because the NDIS is all so new, there's going to be lots of these unexpected sort of practical issues that providers are going to encounter, and they need to be able to solve them.
Yes, and unfortunately, you won't predict all of them or see them coming.
No.
So it's about being responsive and being aware that resolving these issues with the NDIS is time-consuming. And there's no way really to cover the costs of this time for any of us.
Right, yep. Is there anything else you want to add?
Well, really, just to emphasise that because the NDIS is still being developed, things are still changing quite a bit. So what applies today may be different in a few months' time.
Yep, yep.
And understandably, the NDIS is a bit further behind when it comes to developing the systems to accommodate individualised arrangements. So if you're supporting individualised situations, then be realistic and expect that you will encounter some issues. It's pretty much inevitable. You have to be able to roll with all of that.
Mel, thank you very much. It's been terrific.
Thanks, Layton.
That was a really good explanation, Layton. I think it's worth adding that if you're listening to this module as a podcast, it may be valuable for you to watch the video that goes with the description if you can.
I can add that all three of these video descriptions are available individually in the supplementary resources for this module, so you can watch them again individually in your own time.
Okay, so this brings us to activity 4.3, where we are looking at how shared management can work using a plan management option.
So turn your workbook to activity 4.3 now, and once again we're using a service provider's wisdom and experience to explain how the plan management option works. This time for shared management. I paid a visit to Ema Hickey at Avivo, another WA-based provider with loads of shared management experience over many years.
Okay, so let's see how that went.
Hello, Ema. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Layton. You're welcome.
Ema, Avivo has been providing home and community-based services for people in WA across the disability, the aged care and the mental health sectors for, what, nearly 50 years now, is that correct?
Yep. And across all three sectors, we do our best to make sure each person's services and their supports meet their needs. Shared management has been an important part of that in the last 20 years or so, especially in the disability sector.
Okay. Now, Ema, could you please start by describing for us how a shared management arrangement is working using plan management as the NDIS funding option or funding management option for people who are now NDIS participants? And after that, I might ask you a couple of questions.
Sure. I'm going to assume that we've been approached by a person who has an NDIS plan that includes plan management, and that they're approaching us to see what we might be able to offer them. So they're not a current client, and they're not somebody who we've done any pre-planning with. Our first conversation with them will explore what sort of support they want. If they're not all that clear about the options, we can help them clarify that by describing some options for them and asking some more specific questions. Using practical examples is often really helpful. We have a couple of models of plan management that we can show them. To be in our shared management services, there will be someone who wants to engage their own supports, and we check if they're planning to employ workers or contract them or both. Do they want support with payroll and other backroom services? What about recruitment or training and anything else? So we factor all of these things into our discussion. When someone is new to us, we also go over what their responsibilities are in shared management. Sometimes we find that people don't have a clear or a correct understanding of these, even if they've been share managing with another provider before. It's important to be really clear about this right from the start. People with complex supports often want or need support coordination. If that's not been included in their plan but would be useful, we can usually offer something similar to support them as an invoiceable service that they can pay for with their core support funding. Or they can ask the NDIA for a plan correction to get it included in their plan. So it becomes clear how they want to do things. We're both agreed about what they want us to do for them, what they will do for themselves, and what we can do with them to build their capacity and their confidence to do more things for themselves, if that's something they're after. All of that is probably across a couple of conversations, and by this stage, we're either developing a service agreement with them or we're ready to do so. This is another opportunity to make sure we haven't forgotten anything important. The service agreement obviously builds up around what is in the person's NDIS plan, and we go through it with them and we make sure they're really clear about what's covered and what they can afford. From our side as a provider, this also means we're checking the price guide and being clear to the person about the cost of our services. And from a system point of view, we need to be able to invoice against line items, so our quoting needs to be clear about that too. To use a plan management option for shared management, the person must have a specified plan management in their NDIS plan, and they will have received funding that is specifically for the cost of typical plan management services. These are what's called financial intermediary services, including things like doing payroll and paying invoices on the person's behalf. Only providers that are registered to offer plan management can do this, and at this stage, providers can't charge more than the NDIS price guide says for those plan management services. Compared to typical shared management, where providers offer a range of other services, the funding for the financial intermediary services is a very modest amount, which means it's important that providers are really clear about the cost of all the elements of their shared management services and can offer them to people in ways that enable them to quote for the service and invoice against the NDIS price guideline items. Providers need to be able to translate their services into NDIS language. And remember, shared management and plan management are not the same thing. For us, plan management is a mechanism that enables us to offer shared management. We also make sure the person is aware that core support funding is flexible within core supports, but that all other funding doesn't have that flexibility.
Thanks, Emma. Can you comment on what benefits you think providers get from using a plan management option for shared management?
Sure. Three or four things come to mind. Firstly, plan management is funded in addition to the person's supports, so it doesn't impact the funding that's provided for the core supports and the services they can get under their plan.
Okay.
So as a minimum, there's very specific funding for the financial intermediary elements. And if we do a pre-planning session with the person, we're usually asked to quote for the cost of all the plan management elements.
Okay, all right.
Secondly, being able to offer this option to people pretty much gives people the flexibility of self-management while relieving them of the need to physically pay bills and do some of the other paperwork that maybe people don't want to do. Thirdly, the person or the family stays clearly in control of their workers and their own arrangement, knowing that you as the provider are ensuring that their people get paid on time and they have support to meet their responsibilities and their obligations.
Okay, yep.
And finally, I know that people appreciate having a partner who helps them navigate what is a very complex and complicated system. That probably applies to all shared management arrangements, though, regardless of NDIS management option chosen.
Okay, thanks for that. I'm also interested to hear if providers should be aware of any challenges or limitations or issues that you've become aware of or encountered with using a plan management option.
Sure. Well, one thing we've learned is that having a system that enables you to get the quoting and the invoicing done accurately and efficiently is really important.
Uh-huh.
Your system has to be able to track and pay all of the invoices and then claim them.
Yep.
That's boringly practical, but you really want your systems to be doing that efficiently and well for you. Otherwise, you'll be using valuable staff time on it and losing money when you really don't need to be.
Yeah. So do you have any tips for providers about this?
Mostly my advice is to invest in some dedicated staff who understand plan management really well. This is pretty much essential to ensuring that it works well and is handled correctly.
Okay.
Another point is that plan management, as the NDIS have designed it, is an invoice payment service with no added support and may not necessarily include an offer of a payroll service to the person. In most shared management situations, you'll be a more involved plan manager. So in that case, you absolutely need to ensure that all of your staff, systems, costings, and framework can support that.
Okay, yep.
I'd also recommend that if you're new to shared management, using whatever approach, talk to the other providers who are more experienced. Lots of them are willing to share their experience.
So they come and talk to you?
Yep. Finally, it's really important to be open with your people and your families if you're new to doing this. Ask their input along the way and be honest with people that NDIS is still developing and evolving.
Yeah, very much.
So they shouldn't be surprised or too alarmed if they encounter some speed bumps on their personal journey.
Sure. Is there anything else you want to add?
I know that Mel mentioned how changeable things are, similarly to what I just said. So providers need to be responsive and flexible with what people want in their services.
Yeah.
And they also need to be responsive to NDIS. That can include changes to the price guide or to policies that might be relevant to them. Like people and families, you have to be realistic about the point of the scheme development, where we're up to, and expect that there will be issues.
Mm.
And you need to be willing and able to deal with that reality at every level of your organization.
Yep, and that's a challenge.
Yep.
Ema, thank you very much. That's been really helpful.
You're welcome.
We're now up to activity 4.4, so open to that page of your workbook. This relates to the fourth learning outcome, which means we're examining how shared management works when a person chooses the self-management option.
Yes, and you asked Ema to help us out with this one too. Make sure you make some notes as you follow along with what she has to say.
I'm going to explain this one a bit differently, mostly just to highlight what makes this option a bit different to other options. So firstly, many people who choose self-management feel fairly confident that they know what they're doing, or they are clear about what they're looking for in a provider or a partner who can assist them to manage their funding. They're more likely to be inquiring to see if they can purchase services from you. Lots of people might not even have thought about shared management as an opportunity and how that could possibly benefit them when you first encounter them. So in the first instance, you can provide people with information about shared management, but make sure that you don't push them into it. Taking this up has to be their choice. The second thing, and it flows on from that really, is that people who want to use this approach might really benefit from the capacity building you can do with them to increase their capacity, confidence, and independence. In that regard, it's useful to know that the NDIS has published a very good self-management guide that has lots of useful, practical suggestions about self-managing in the NDIS. This and lots of other self-management resources could be really useful to people and families, so point them towards those resources. Thirdly, people who want capacity building support don't necessarily ever want to do everything themselves. There are a lot of people out there who think that doing timesheets and payroll runs, for example, doesn't add much value to their lives, so they have no ambition to do these things themselves. So just remember that capacity building doesn't mean having to get someone to the point of doing everything for themselves, especially if that's not what they actually want. Fourthly, people can choose to self-manage all or just some of their funding and supports. They don't need to self-manage everything. Fifthly, people who choose to self-manage can purchase services from providers, including from providers who are not registered with the NDIS. And they can pay different rates to what is listed in the NDIS price guide, which gives people a bit more flexibility over their budget. They can stretch it if they want to, or they can pay more for something if they believe it's worthwhile. So, if someone with self-management in their plan comes to us and decides to use our shared management services, the next discussion we have with them will be to get really clear about what they're looking for, so we know what services they want to purchase. Again, you can see the importance of being really clear about the cost of each element of your shared management services and how you can invoice for these using price guideline items. This enables the person to make informed decisions about which services they most want and can afford without losing out on the services outlined in their plan. Lots of people who have complex support needs have support coordination included in their plans. In our opinion, support coordination is really powerful and useful in enabling people to implement their plans and achieve good outcomes when it's done well. But that doesn't extend to the support coordinator doing things like recruiting workers, paying people, or organizing rosters. The role is different to that. We know that lots of people and families also say that support coordination can be really powerful based on their experiences of it. Sometimes people miss out on support coordination in their plans, even though they benefit from it. Sometimes going back to the NDIA for a plan correction can have that changed. And sometimes people can use the flexibility of their core support funding to purchase something similar to support coordination. Best practice in support coordination involves using an independent support coordinator. So encouraging people to use a different provider for this service is probably a good idea. That can give the person some useful, different ideas and perspectives. It helps keep your services fresh, and it prevents providers sliding towards trapping people within their services. If you were taking a capacity building approach with the person, think about how that will be reflected in the service agreement and what it will look like in terms of delivering services, and then evaluating their effectiveness. Sometimes the person is really clear about the outcomes they're expecting from capacity building, which can make the planning, delivery, and the evaluation all a bit easier. Unlike the plan management option, people who choose the self-managed approach to shared management won't automatically get the administrative support to pay invoices and manage payroll, for example. And the self-managers may choose to do these things themselves. They don't have to use a third-party payroll service just because they're choosing to share manage. What we're finding at this stage is that people who are choosing this option really value having us as a partner to walk alongside them as the NDIS keeps developing. The complexity and changeability of the scheme can be quite overwhelming. And given that keeping up with changes and managing the complexity is absolutely core to our ability to prosper as an organisation, we're in a fairly good position to keep them informed about changes that are relevant to their situation.
Thanks for that, Emma. I just want to check that I'm understanding this correctly. I know that when people self-manage in the NDIS in a normal self-management situation, they can purchase their supports from any provider, registered or not registered. They can also hire their own workers directly if they want to, and if the person chooses to, they can purchase their direct supports from a provider like Avivo, right?
Yep.
And if they do that, then under the NDIS rules, you as a provider have to draw up a service agreement with the person.
You don't have to draw up a service agreement, but it's strongly recommended. It's much better to have a clear agreement from the beginning to help avoid confusion later.
Okay.
A service agreement can be amended if things change. It's just a snapshot of the current arrangement, so it needs to be changed as things evolve.
Okay. So when they use a self-management approach for doing shared management, essentially what's happening here is that instead of purchasing direct supports for themselves, they might be purchasing other services that support them to self-manage. And these are elements of your shared management services. I have that correct?
Yep. Using the self-management approach enables providers to offer lots of different options.
Great. Okay. So what benefits do providers get from using this option?
In our experience, lots of self-managers choose this because they want services that are really focused on achieving individualized outcomes for the person. So they're looking for something quite bespoke and often put a lot of energy into creating that. Providers can learn heaps from people like this. For us, some of what we've learned from people has definitely had a positive impact on our broader organization and our service offerings.
Yeah.
It also adds another dimension to your service offerings and gives another opportunity to attract people to your organisation.
Okay. What about issues and limitations with this approach? What do people expect?
I think the main thing to be aware of is that people who self-manage are often wanting quite different things to each other. So you need to be able to individualise services. If your services include one that groups people together, then you may not be in a position to offer the level of differentiation that people are after.
Okay.
And as I said with the plan management option, being able to quote for your services and then efficiently and systematically invoicing for them and have them paid for is going to be really important in terms of cost control and financial sustainability.
Yeah.
So your systems need to be able to accommodate that.
Okay. That's great, Emma. I'm going to wrap it up there unless you've got anything else you want to add.
No, I think that's all in.
Great. Well, thanks so much once again. I know that lots of providers hopefully will be starting to feel a whole lot clearer about shared management in the NDIS now.
You're welcome, Leighton. Thanks so much for the opportunity to contribute. Good luck with it, everyone.
All right, we're nearly at the end, so stay with us. We're up to activity 4.5 now. So open to that page in your workbook. And in this activity, we want to focus on some of the practical implications you're likely to face doing shared management in an NDIS context.
Yes, and knowing that shared management can work in the NDIS is one thing, but knowing specifically what you need to do to make it work is another thing. And while we can't give you definitive answers, this activity should help you move in the right direction at a fairly practical level.
You'll see that there are four questions with response boxes. We want you to make some initial notes in the relevant boxes as Sue and I discuss these aspects. You'll benefit from spending a few minutes afterwards filling your thoughts out some more as they relate to your organisation's specific situation. So let's start by talking about which of the three management options is the best one that providers to go with.
Well, the first thing to say is to emphasise the point that all of these options can and do work. Secondly, I want to be really clear that WACE doesn't see any one approach as being better than the others. I want to be really clear about those two things first up. And thirdly, there isn't a how-to blueprint or template that will enable providers to quickly and efficiently sort out all the practical things. There's no magic bullet, I guess, or quick fix for how to do this.
Okay, so both Mel and Ema talked about the way the NDIS is still developing, so things are continuing to change quite a lot. That means that what works today might be different in a few months' time. There's a need to be responsive as things change, isn't there?
Yes, absolutely. Now, one consequence of what you've learned so far is that each organization will need to decide for themselves which option or options are going to work best for you as a provider. And the decision should primarily be based on the options alignment to your own particular mission statement or purpose and your values.
Yep.
All of your services need to line up with those things. So if one NDIS management option seems to fit better than the others for your shed management offering, that is probably the one to look at first.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So after that, you need to be confident that you can align your shed management option with your organization's systems, processes, and cost structures. For example, if you already offer a third-party payroll service, you might think that the plan management approach will most easily align with some of the key systems and processes you already have in place.
Okay, and you mentioned cost structures, so I can't let that slide without emphasizing the point that Ema made about this. Your organization needs to know what it costs to deliver each element of your shared management services. If you can't clearly identify these costs and deliver services within an appropriate budget, you risk overcharging people for the services you deliver, or delivering more services than the person's funding can pay you for, or delivering services that you don't get paid for at all.
Yes, I agree. Getting this wrong could be disastrous for your organization and result in people receiving less services that they need and have been funded for. So it can potentially be poor outcomes all around, really.
So that brings us to the issue of how providers can best respond to people who choose an NDIS management option that they don't offer or can't easily support. And you may want to make some notes to this in that second discussion box in Activity 4.5.
Yes, this could be a real dilemma that you're likely to face at some point.
So let's say a person comes to you, might have chosen, say, plan management in their NDIS plan, and they want to set up shared management, but you as a provider, your preferred option is, let's say, agency management, and your systems are all geared around that. What are you going to do?
Well, it's ultimately the person's choice about which option they want to use, but it makes sense to explore with them why it's their preferred option.
Mm-hmm.
What benefits are they getting from it? And can you provide those same benefits using another option? Understanding their why is really important here.
Yeah. And that needs to be a very open and exploratory conversation, certainly not a coercive one. At the end of the discussion, if the person wants to change their management option, that may mean that they need to ask the NDIA for a light touch plan review just to change that.
You might need to support them with that. And keeping in mind that the person can't set up a new shared management arrangement with you until that review has been completed, and they probably won't want a gap in their services while the review happens.
So there's a few things to just check in there and keep in balance that are really practical for the person and for you as an organisation.
So now, if the person decides to stick with their preferred option, then it probably becomes a simple decision for you as a provider. Are you able and willing to adapt your approach to support their choice in this? Or is there another provider you can refer them to that uses that option that they have chosen?
In the third part of Activity 4.5, we just want you to think about what some of the practical changes are that you might need to make. Now, we've loosely classified some thoughts under staffing, processes and systems, though you might realise there are some other categories or other changes you need to think about.
Yes, and once again, we can't be prescriptive here. What applies to you is very much going to depend on where your organisation is up to in your own evolution of adapting to the NDIS. So bear that in mind as we give you just a few thoughts to push you along.
Okay, so under the staffing heading, you might need to create some brand new roles, or you might need to revisit the outcomes that various positions are expected to deliver.
You might need to recruit new staff who bring fresh perspectives because they're not as familiar with how you've been doing things until now. And of course, it's very possible that staff might need training or ongoing professional development.
Yes, I remember Ema said that if you want to use a plan management option for shared management, make sure you have staff who know plan management really well, for example.
And you might also need to review some of your processes, and this can be a whole lot of things. For example, the NDIA completely revisited the participant pathway, the whole journey that a typical person can expect to have as they come to the NDIS and become a participant in the scheme.
Yes, and Mel mentioned how important it is to monitor things alongside people. This is something we explore in more detail in Module 7, but it's an example of knowing what your organisation's process is when it comes to doing that, be able to work out the sort of staff time required and hence be able to cost it.
Or you might decide to revise your recruitment processes and recruit people using a whole new approach, such as values-based recruiting, for example. We know that providers that are really thriving under the NDIS are those who are doing things in new ways and being more adventurous in exploring what's possible.
And all of this may require some changes to some of your systems, such as your client management system.
Or your invoicing system, or a system for ensuring you provide quality services. We know that the NDIS Quality and Safeguarding Commission is bringing in a whole new quality and safeguarding system. So all providers will need to revise how they ensure quality within the foreseeable future.
Yeah, this is a big issue. So Module 7 is devoted to quality and safeguarding completely, and we've taken a bit of an atypical approach to exploring this topic because we think it's really important. Sue, we're nearly at the end now. Is there anything else you want to say to close this discussion?
I think we've said most things, Leighton, but I want to point people to the last question, Activity 4.5. The question is, what actions are you going to take to support people in the NDIS to use shared management? Each provider needs to spend a bit of time answering this question for themselves. Only you will be able to identify what you need to do to ensure that your shared management fits the emerging NDIS. So spend a few minutes to think about this question and maybe write down three things even that you can and will do.
Yep, and don't go for more than three. The list will become overwhelming and you may struggle to do any of them. But you're right, Sue, this is the action piece, and without some action, the learning risks just being a bit pointless. So to close out the module, turn to activity 4.6 in your workbook. This should take you no more than 2 minutes to complete because you've seen this activity before.
That's right. It should look really familiar to you. When this recording finishes, just rate yourself for what you know about shared management in the NDIS now. If we've done our job well, your score should be higher than it was at the start of the module.
But it's quite likely that you'll still feel like there is more you need to know.
Yes, and we'd be surprised if that wasn't the case after completing just one 45-minute learning module on the topic.
So thanks for checking in with us. Please also check out the supplementary resources. And Sue, thanks again for co-hosting with me.
No worries, Leighton. Bye, everyone, and see you in Module 5.